Hi, good evening. This is Dr. Roger Murphy, author of Treating and Beating Fibromyalgia and Chronic T Syndrome. Thank you for joining me for this afternoon's presentation on ways that you can increase your energy. I've been in private practice for 26 years, and I've specialized in fibromyalgia for the last 20 years. I'm a board-certified chiropractic physician, board-certified nutritional specialist. For a number of years, I owned a very large integrative medical practice here in Birmingham, Alabama, on the campus of Brookwood Hospital. In 2003, I sold that practice, and I've been out practicing solo ever since. My book is now in its fifth edition, and my practice has evolved to where 95% of my practice is phone consults, and I work with patients all throughout North America. One of the biggest complaints I get from those I interact with fibromyalgia is this low energy. They talk about how if they just had more energy, they could deal with their pain. And that's saying a lot because, again, doing this for 20 years, I know just how much pain my patients are having, and those with fibromyalgia have a tremendous amount of pain. For those of you who are not really sure if you have fibromyalgia or you have chronic fatigue syndrome or you have polymyalgia or whatever it is, it just kind of happened on this call, let me share with you briefly a little bit about what fibromyalgia is, and then we'll get down to the nitty-gritty of me. I'm going to share with you this evening about things that you can do to help you have more energy. And ultimately, if you've got the goal, I'd like to help you to get healthy and feel good again. And we'll talk about that this evening. Now, I want you to stay tuned to the very end, because at the very end, I'm going to be sharing some information that's going to tie everything all up. The other thing I'd like to encourage you to do, if you don't have it, I would encourage you to get some paper and a pen, because you're going to want to take notes on this presentation. Some of it can be kind of nerdy. Some biochemistry I'm going to be talking about, some physiology, some chemistry, and I'm going to try to make it as simple as I can, but if it's the first time you've heard some of these terms, it can seem a little bit over your head. Now, most of the material that I'm going to be covering tonight is in my book, Treating and Beating Fibromyalgia and Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, and that's available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and on my website, GetFibroBooks.com. You can certainly reference a lot of what I'm going to be going over with tonight in the book, but I'm going to be sharing some new material as well. So I encourage you to get some paper and a pen, and you're going to want to take some notes. Well, a little bit about fibromyalgia. You know, what is fibromyalgia? Well, fibromyalgia is an illness. It's really a syndrome, a group of symptoms that come together that people share in common, and it's characterized by diffuse achy muscle pain, poor sleep, and unrelenting fatigue. Leading fibromyalgia experts estimate that between 2-4% of the general population suffer with this syndrome. 90% of them are women. I really believe that fibromyalgia has crossed that threshold. I think that we're seeing upwards of 10% of the population have fibromyalgia. I think we're going to continue to see that this syndrome is going to be diagnosed more and more as the years go by, partly because doctors have finally realized that there is a thing called fibromyalgia. Unfortunately, there's many doctors who still don't believe in fibromyalgia, but they don't know what else to call it, the symptoms that you have, so they're going to diagnose it with fibromyalgia. The other thing I think we're seeing is that more people have the illness because I really believe what brings on fibromyalgia is stress, and that sounds really simplistic, and I'm going to explain that, but stress really is a catalyst for this syndrome, and it can be from all sorts of different stressors, things that happen in your life, whether that's an illness or a surgery or loss of a loved one or years and years of being under chronic stress, whatever it is. But something comes along that's the straw that breaks the camel's back, and then from then on, you're never the same. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. Now, the symptoms of fibromyalgia, as I mentioned earlier, the most common symptoms, the one that everyone shares has in common, is, of course, the pain. And the pain can be debilitating. I mean, the pain can be as bad as any pain you could ever imagine. And for some people, that pain is unbearable. But the fatigue is probably a close second. And they also have problems with irritable bowel syndrome, and they can be have problems with mental clarity issues, brain fog, sleep apnea, fibro fog, depression, anxiety, restless leg syndrome, headaches. Some individuals with fibromyalgia have a poorly functioning immune system. There's many different symptoms that come underneath this umbrella called fibromyalgia, but fibromyalgia is just a syndrome, which means that it's a group of symptoms that people that get diagnosed with fibromyalgia have in common. What we really want to know is, what are causing these symptoms? And traditional medicine is very good at recommending drugs to help reduce symptoms. They're good if you have high blood pressure. They'll put you on a blood pressure pill to bring your blood pressure down. But if you've got type 2 diabetes because you're overweight, they can put you on metformin to bring your blood sugar down. If you can't sleep, they put you on a sleeping pill. If you have pain, they put you on a pain pill. The problem with fibromyalgia is there's just so many dadgum symptoms that if you're not careful, you can be on half a dozen to a dozen drugs before you know it. A drug to put you asleep, a drug to wake you up, a drug to slow you down, a drug to speed you up. The problem with that is that every drug has a potential side effect, and these side effects can actually mirror the symptoms that we see in fibromyalgia. So Ambien, common drug for sleep, everybody with fibromyalgia has problems with their sleep, that can cause diffuse achy muscle pain, brain fog, incoordination, balance issues. It can cause anxiety and cause depression. It can actually interfere with your sleep. Savella and Cymbalta, two common antidepressants that have been recommended for fibromyalgia, can cause diffuse achy muscle pain. They can cause anxiety and depression. They can interfere with your sleep. They actually deplete your natural sleep hormone, melatonin. Lyrica, surprisingly enough, actually can cause pain. It causes weight gain, water retention. It can cause brain fog, anxiety, depression, all sorts of potential side effects associated with these medications. The problem is, once you're on half a dozen to a dozen drugs, you don't know whether the drugs are helping or hurting. And unfortunately, conventional medicine alone is a dead end for fibromyalgia. It doesn't work. If we look at the studies, they show that medication alone over a 15-year period does not help those with fibromyalgia. The symptoms do not improve, at least not long-term. Now, I'm not anti-drug. I'm really not. Even though in my practice, I try to do it all naturally. I'm a realist. There's a time, there's a place for medications, and sometimes it's your only option. What I am against is this mentality of learning to live with it. Because you've got fibromyalgia, we can't help you. We can give you some medications to cover up the symptoms, but you're going to have to learn to live with it. What we really want to be asking is, what is the cause of this low energy? What's the cause of this pain? What's the cause of this poor sleep? It's not because you've got a drug deficiency. There's got to be something else going on. Doing this for 20 years, and this is all I've done, it's all I've specialized in, is fibromyalgia for the last 20 years, I believe without a doubt that the cause of fibromyalgia is a dysfunction in our stress coping systems and our ability to regulate our self-regulating mechanisms. You have a system called the HPA axis, the hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenals. And several studies have demonstrated that chronic stress undermines these normal processes that allow the body to be able to regulate itself. I believe that stress is the catalyst for fibromyalgia. In fact, the Fibromyalgia Network reports that 62% of their patient surveys show that emotional or physical stress, again, that could be from a surgery, can be from, you know, from a hysterectomy, it can be from a failed marriage, it can be from taking care of an elderly parent for a number of years, it could be taking care of a special needs child, not getting any sleep, whatever it is, but something is a stressor or stressors come along, and it causes your self-regulating stress coping abilities not to be able to handle what's going on. You see, I believe that we're all born with a stress coping savings account. And in this stress coping savings account, we have certain chemicals that allow us to deal with stress. And the more stress that we get under, the more chemicals we get up. So we have serotonin and dopamine and cortisol and DHEA, meaning these things we're going to be talking about tonight, certain vitamins and minerals that help us deal with stress. And all day long, we're under stress. And the more stress that we're with, we encounter, the more withdrawals we make from our stress coping savings account. Pretty soon, if you're not careful, after years of poor sleep and drugs and all the things that go with fibromyalgia, being run down and exhausted and being sick, you deplete. In fact, you bankrupt your stress coping chemicals. That puts all this stress on the hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenals. This system, the HPA axis, actually regulates our brain chemicals. It regulates our stress coping abilities, our respiratory system, our pain and inflammation, how we experience pain and inflammation, our sleep-wake cycle. Can we fall asleep? When do we wake up? It affects our stress coping glands, the adrenal glands, our immune system, our digestion, our elimination. It affects our blood pressure, our body temperature. So anything that disrupts this system from coordinating the body is like a domino effect that sets off a chain reaction to where you get all these different systems in the body that aren't working correctly. You see, you don't have to think about taking 12 breaths per minute. You don't have to think about pumping blood through 60 miles of arteries and veins every day. I'm sorry, every minute. You don't have to think about digesting your food. You don't have to think about regenerating your liver. You have a new liver every 3 months because the body's always healing itself. We don't have to think about these things. We don't have to think about regulating our blood pressure as we go up a flight of steps. It should go up so we have getting more blood to the muscles. We don't have to think about breaking out in a sweat, perspiring, when we go outside on a hot day to cool us off. We don't think about these things. It's the hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenals, the self-regulating mechanisms, these systems that do that for us. But when they get under too much stress, these different systems, our sleep-wake cycle, our pain systems, our stress coping abilities, our blood pressure, our digestion, all these things start to have problems. And there's no wonder that we start having all these symptoms that we see with fibromyalgia. It's no wonder with fibromyalgia you have no energy because your systems have gone haywire. They're not working like they're supposed to. The first thing we really need to talk about tonight is how do we take the stress off this hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal, these organs, these glands that we have in the body. They're supposed to help us handle stress and then are supposed to coordinate the different functions of the body. Well, the first place to start is making sure you're getting deep restorative sleep, something that very few people with fibromyalgia get. Most people with fibromyalgia either don't sleep or they're taking medications that knock them out to put them to sleep. But anyone with fibromyalgia struggles with their sleep night after night. And what we know is that poor sleep increases a certain hormone called substance P. The higher your substance P level, the lower your pain threshold, which means that you have more pain. Pain is magnified. Pain can be from an injury, an old injury. It can be from osteoarthritis, which is wear and tear arthritis. It can be from osteoporosis, which is bone loss. It can be from just normal day-to-day activity that normally it shouldn't bother you, but because your pain threshold's so low, pain is magnified. When you're not getting deep restored to sleep, you deplete a hormone called human growth hormone, which is designed to help you repair the body. One of the things it repairs is damaged muscle fibers or soft tissue that gets damaged through wear and tear throughout the day. But if you're not getting deep restored to sleep, this hormone is not being released. It becomes depleted. So the body is not repairing itself like it's supposed to. Obviously, if you're not getting deep restorative sleep, you're not going to have much energy because you're not getting enough rest. It also can deplete your metabolism because it affects your thyroid function. So when your thyroid function is not working as it should, everything starts to slow down. We're going to talk about that this evening. So research shows that sleep deprivation markedly increases inflammatory chemicals by 40%. Studies also show that the symptoms associated with fibromyalgia, including obviously fatigue, but also low moods and anxiety and pain, irritable bowel, restless legs, all these are aggravated or are triggered by poor sleep. So the first thing we've got to spend some time on this evening that's going to be a big help for you is to learn about how to get deep restorative sleep on a consistent basis. So many of you are taking sleep medications like Ambien or Nesta. Again, the problem with those medications is that it can cause short-term memory loss, flu-like symptoms, diffuse aching muscle pain, fatigue, diarrhea, anxiety, depression, and coordination, balance issue, joint pain, upper respiratory infections, urinary tract infections. So if you can do it naturally, that's what you want to do, because you don't have an Ambien deficiency or a Flexeril deficiency or an Ativan deficiency or a Clonopin deficiency. All these medications are associated with potential side effects. In fact, sleep drugs are also associated with increased risk of death from all causes, including heart attack, stroke, and cancer, similar to the increased risk of death we see from smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. Now, I'm not telling you to stop your sleep medications. Don't do that. What I want to do is to educate you on the importance of learning about some other ways that you can get a good night's sleep and do it without medications. And we're going to talk about this evening, and I go into great detail about those protocols in my book as well. So again, I'm not telling you to stop your medications. Please don't do that. At some point, when I'm working at my patients, when they're working with me, and typically on half a dozen to a dozen drugs when we start, I'm able to slowly wean them off their medications or most of their medications, but only after I get them feeling better using the protocols that I use with them and have been using for the last 2 decades. But I never tell patients to stop their medications, and certainly you want to work with a doctor who knows how to help you wean off your medications. But, you know, you need to realize that deeper sorts of sleep is the first key to feeling good, getting your energy back, and staying that way. And I want to encourage you to learn more about that this evening. I'm going to spend some more time on two other conditions that I think are crucial, just as important, adrenal fatigue and thyroid, and a couple of other things this evening. And so I want to leave you with this about your sleep, because I think it's obvious. If you don't get a good night's sleep, you feel worse, and you know that. There's protocols in my book using natural supplements, high doses, but the right doses and combinations of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, essential fatty acids, and over-the-counter hormones, including simple things like melatonin, that I have been able to use over the last 20 years that work consistently for my patients. Now, I know many patients have tried over-the-counter natural things for sleep, and they've not worked. But the advantage that I have is that for the last 20 years, this is all I do. It's all I've done. And every patient that I encounter has a problem in their sleep. And I work with every single patient to help them either get off their medication or drastically reduce their sleep medications and get them on something naturally. That's the first thing that I do when I start working with a patient. So I've had years and years and years of experience of helping patients to be able to overcome this sleep issue. And I encourage you to check out those protocols in the book. Now, just as importantly, once you start sleeping, you start following some of the protocols in the book, and you see, wow, I'm finally sleeping for the first time in years, and I actually have a little bit of energy, what typically happens is patients overdo it. Because, you know, you might not feel good again, right? So that's typical for fibromyalgia. You have good days and you have bad days. And so if you have a good day, a lot of times you wash the car or you go grocery shopping or you cook dinner. Whatever it is, the little things that you used to be able to do that you can't do now, you do, and you overdo it. And then what happens? You wind up in bed for 2 or 3 days. You crash. You have a fibro flare. What causes that? Well, one of the biggest energy robbers for those with fibromyalgia is a condition called adrenal fatigue. And I want to spend some time explaining this condition, and I want to share with you protocols, things that you can do right away that will help this condition. So your adrenal glands are two glands. They're about the size of a pea. They're very small, and they sit on top of your kidneys. But they're very, very important. And they secrete certain hormones that are essential for life, very important for energy and stamina, resistance to stress, and for blocking pain and so many things. But acute or chronic long-term stress starts to compromise the adrenal glands from being able to do their job. And adrenal fatigue has all the symptoms that you would see with someone with fibromyalgia. So they have low energy, number one. They have pain, diffuse pain. Oftentimes they have low blood sugar. Many times they have low blood pressure. a lot of times you'll see that they cannot get their balance. They have problems with incoordination, problems with balance issues. And a lot of times they'll feel dizzy when they go from lying down to standing up or sitting to standing up because the adrenal glands are not getting enough blood and oxygen to the cells and the muscles and the brain for that to happen. It's bad enough they feel nauseated, especially in the morning when they first wake up when the cortisol level should be at its highest. They can have problems with irritable bowel syndrome, abdominal pain, muscle and joint pain, as I mentioned. A lot of times they start getting hyperpigmentation, excessive skin color changes. They get loss of scalp health, so you start losing your hair. They can have problems, as I mentioned earlier, with their mental acuity. So they start having trouble remembering what they're talking about or remembering what they did last week. They can have problems with low body temperature, which also is a sign of low thyroid. They can have issues with a low immune function, so they start having a lot more sinus infections, urinary tract infections, colds, flus, those kind of things. And a lot of times they just don't feel good. When you get adrenal fatigue, you just feel run down. You just feel blah. You feel like you get up and go, it's got up and went. And with adrenal fatigue, there's two parts of the adrenal gland that we need to talk about. One of those is called the adrenal medulla. And this is, again, some of the detailed stuff. So stay with me and, you know, definitely take notes. But I'm going to tie it all together for you. Okay, I'm going to make it simple, even though I don't want to talk down to you, because I think a lot of times what happens with people with fibromyalgia, they are encouraged to get a book that, you know, tells them how to learn to live with it, and, you know, what to eat, what foods you need to eat to help, and, you know, exercises you need to do. Or they go to a doctor that tells you, you know, you just need to do exercise more or get a good night's sleep or, you know, or lose some weight. Well, heck, you'd love to do all that. You know, I mean, you'd love to get a good night's sleep, but you hadn't slept in years. And you'd love to exercise, but you can't exercise. I mean, you can hardly get out of bed. And so you're carrying around 40 extra pounds, some of you are, and you'd love to lose weight, but you can't lose weight. Even if you tried to, even if you starve yourself, you gain weight because of the medications you're on, and your metabolism is so low, there's no way you can lose weight. So what I don't want to do tonight is give you fluff. And so some of the things I'm going to be going into detail can seem a little complicated. I make it much easier in the book, and I encourage you, obviously, to get the book to know more about this stuff. But just to share with you a little bit, so hang in there with me because this is important. There's two lobes of this gland called the adrenal gland. One of them is called the medulla. The other one is called the cortex. We're going to be talking primarily about the cortex tonight. The medulla produces norepinephrine or adrenaline, and these hormones are typically used for acute stress. So if someone comes up behind you and tries to rob you or something startles you, a scary point in a scary movie, your adrenaline is released. So your blood pressure goes up, heart rate goes up, your breathing goes up, and that's from adrenaline, okay? And that's important. I mean, you need to have adrenaline. So if you need a burst of energy to do something or to get away from a burglar or whatever that is, then you want to have that adrenaline that, you know, you got to have that. But long term, that can be exhausting. What we want to talk about tonight is the adrenal cortex. The adrenal cortex is primarily associated with response to chronic stress, infections, prolonged periods of not getting that deep restorative sleep, prolonged periods of illness like fibromyalgia where you get run down, you know, emotional, chemical, physical stressors over the years that have finally caught up with you. The hormones of the cortex are known as steroids, and the main one is cortisol, which is an anti-inflammatory, so it helps with pain. But it's also very important to help you have stamina and resilience to stress. But the cortex also produces testosterone, estrogen, DHEA, aldosterone, and progesterone. All these hormones are very, very important in helping you to overcome fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is largely a condition where the body's self-regulating mechanisms, as I mentioned earlier, are not working correctly. If you can take the stress off of that and then help the body start to producing these hormones that it needs to work properly, you'll see major changes in how you feel. You'll see major changes in the ability to actually finally get healthy and feel good again. And this is what I do with my patients. I help them find out where they're broken down biochemically and hormonally, and then help them fix those things. But the cortex is crucial for allowing you to have this ability to rebound from stress. What happens with fibro is you get so run down and you get so depleted in cortisol and DHEA and these other hormones that stress is magnified. And you don't have any stamina stress. And so it becomes more pronounced. So noises, crowds, smells, mental tasks, physical activity, any stimulation, bright lights, traffic, any of those things can cause you to feel fatigued and run down and contribute to have more pain, to have a flare-up. You've not only depleted your stress-coping chemicals because you're not getting deep restored to sleep, and when you get deep restored to sleep, you're making deposits into your stress-coping savings account, so you're filling it up with serotonin and other things you need to help you deal with stress and help you sleep better. But you've also depleted your stress-coping glands, the adrenal glands. And when that happens, you find that stress and stressful situations really take it out of you. So, you know, you go to a grocery shopping, or you go to a ball game, or you go to a doctor's visit. Maybe you go out to eat. Heaven forbid you go on a vacation because you probably can't. But you go try to do these things, and then you pay for it the next day. For many with fibromyalgia, their stress coping abilities get so low and their stress coping glands, the adrenal glands, are functioning so poorly that they start to become a recluse. They rarely go outside their house because they find that they don't know if this is going to be a good day or a bad day. I mean, are they going to have pain, not going to have pain? Are they have energy, not going to have energy, headaches? Is it going to be a day when they can't leave the bathroom because of IBS? You know, they don't know. They really don't. And the other thing they see is that they don't want to go out with friends or even interact with family a lot of times or do the little things that they used to be able to do because they know if they do, they're going to pay a price. And that price is oftentimes they wind up with a flare for 2 or 3 days afterwards. This is largely due to the fact that your adrenal glands are not working like they're supposed to. You don't get enough cortisol and enough DHEA. So your stress coping hormones are low. And because stress is magnified, that's exhausting. So you get under stress, and it causes you to feel more stress, which then causes you to have less ability to to have these hormones, and then you have more stress. And it's this vicious cycle that you get in where you're constantly depleting the stress coping chemicals you should be getting in when you get deeper chores of sleep, and the stress coping chemicals and hormones you should have when your adrenal glands are working correctly. But the stress that you have and this inability to handle stress day in and day out, it leads to you being exhausted because you just can't handle anything. Again, that's why loud noises or bright lights, being in crowds, being around even family members is exhausting. You can't deal with it. That is a huge energy robber. And what we see is that initially when you get under stress, the adrenal glands release certain hormones like adrenaline, and then eventually start to release cortisol to allow you, to deal with the stress. Eventually, though, your adrenal glands will tell you after years of poor sleep and taking prescription medications and things that are causing a lot of internal stress, eventually your adrenal glands quit working. And once adrenal exhaustion sets in, your body can't release enough cortisol to keep up with the daily demands of stress that you're under. And then when that happens, now you see that you're in adrenal exhaustion, and poor health quickly falls once that happens. And you find that when you get in this shape, you stay exhausted. And to complicate matters, when you get this run down, your DHEA, another very vital hormone that's produced by the adrenal cortex, it becomes depleted. And your DHEA helps to boost your energy, your sex drive, your your resistance to stress, your self-defense mechanisms, a really potent hormone to help your immune system. If you get low in it, you tend to have anxiety. It's a real potent anti-anxiety hormone, and it affects your general well-being. And we see that most people that I work with fibromyalgia have low DHEA levels. I recommend that you get tested to see what your DHEA level is. You can get that tested through blood work. My patients, I test it when I check their cortisol levels. I do a saliva test that shows me four samples of their cortisol over the day. So your cortisol level should be at its highest in the morning, then it should drop off a little bit mid-morning, drop off again late afternoon, and it should be at its lowest at bedtime. You don't want your cortisol level to spike up at bedtime, which some people get a second wind at bedtime. The cortisol level actually goes up, and that then depletes or blocks their natural sleep hormone melatonin, so they can't fall asleep and oftentimes can't stay asleep. There's ways to combat that. I talk about that in the book. But for most people, what they see is their cortisol level is very low in the morning. And what they find is first thing in the morning when they wake up, they're not hungry. Or they skip breakfast because they may be nauseated. Part of that is what you're doing is trying to self-medicate yourself. Cortisol level should be at its highest first thing in the morning. By fasting, by not eating any breakfast in the morning, you can keep your low cortisol level at least elevated for you. You can keep it at least up. But once you eat, you quickly see that your cortisol level starts to go down. Or, like many of my patients, eventually you have to eat because if you don't, your blood sugar drops so low, you feel terrible. But I want to encourage you, the first thing to really start to help your adrenal fatigue issues is to make sure that you're eating breakfast. So you're supposed to break the fast. So you've been fasting for 8 to 10 hours, whatever it is. You want to make sure you're eating some breakfast in the morning so that you can avoid a drop-off in your blood sugar, which that creates more adrenal fatigue. Ideally, you'd have a saliva test. If you were working with me, we would do a saliva test to see exactly when you need to be taking these adrenal cortex supplements that I'm going to be sharing with you in just a minute. You know exactly the amount and when to take, as well as how much DHEA. You can get around that by doing some self-tests, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But, you know, what we see is there's unfortunately not enough doctors out there doing these kind of tests. So what they're doing is real basic testing. They're not testing your adrenal glands. They're not testing your. They're not doing a four sample cortisol test. They're not even talking about it. They don't even know anything about it. And they're not checking your DHEA level. They're not seeing if you're struggling with your stress coping abilities. They don't even know anything about that. So I think the specialists out there, the ones that are quote unquote fibromyalgia specialists, rheumatologists, are the worst doctors that ever could be for fibromyalgia, because the only thing they know to do is to give patients more and more drugs. And drugs don't get you healthy. Now, drugs can be helpful. I'm not saying that. Sometimes they're their only choice. But with fibromyalgia, oftentimes the more drugs you take, the more side effects you create and the more problems you have. Taking more and more drugs is not the answer. Finding and fixing the underlying causes of the symptoms, low energy, the poor sleep, the pain, the IBS, the restless leg syndrome, that's the key. So I think that fibromyalgia is poorly served by rheumatologists and other doctors who tell you, here, take this drug and learn to live with it. I'm not one of those doctors. I don't believe you need to learn to live with it. I believe you need to learn to overcome it, and that's why I'm sharing this information with you tonight. You can go on my website, yourfibrodoctor.com, and you can see roughly, you can listen to or read roughly about 80 testimonials of patients who've worked with me personally, one-on-one through phone consults on an ongoing basis, who have been able to overcome their fibromyalgia. There's success stories in the book as well. But I don't know of any other doctor out there who is sharing their success stories of fibromyalgia because they're not having any. and that's not to be arrogant or braggadocious. what it is to hopefully encourage you to learn that there are some other options for you and there is some hope. I've been fortunate enough over the last 20 years to come up with a program, systematic way of helping my patients get healthy, which is the only way to feel good again and stay that way. And I've been able to duplicate that over and over and over again. And I do that through using high doses, but the right doses and combinations of natural vitamins, minerals, amino acids, essential fatty acids, and over-the-counter hormones, as well as special diets that I use for my patients. Many of these things are talked about in the book. And so there is hope. You don't have to buy into this idea that you just have to learn to live with it. That's not true. So I strongly encourage you to learn more about adrenal fatigue. And one of the things that you're going to learn about is that you can help your adrenal fatigue by taking over-the-counter adrenal cortex supplements. Now, be very, very careful. There are adrenal supplements and there's adrenal cortex supplements. There's a big difference. What you don't want to do is take what's called whole, W-H-O-L-E, whole glandular, adrenal glandular supplements, because they're going to have adrenaline in them, and that's going to be too stressful for you. You don't want to do that. You want to take adrenal cortex, which just has the hormones that we see in the cortex, like the cortisol and the DHEA. You just want to take that. And there are vendors out there who have that. I have it made special for my patients. You don't have to get it from me. You can learn more about that supplement on my website, yourfibrodoctor.com. You can learn more about it. I have it made for me because I want to know, number one, that it's highest quality that there is. Two, it needs to come from grass-fed cattle, and so we know it's not going to have any chance of being tainted with mal cow disease. So my supplements come from New Zealand and New Zealand cows, where there's never been mad cow disease. They're fed grass, not grains, not dead cattle, which is how mad cow disease started. It started because farmers and cattlemen, or a big industry, were feeding their cattle, dead diseased cattle, parts. And cows aren't supposed to eat other cattle. They're not cannibals. So the adrenal cortex that is made for me in New Zealand comes from cattle that eat grass. The other thing is, adrenal cortex supplements, you can find ARG, Allergy Research Group. You can find them online. They make one. There's some others out there that have a minute, maybe 50 milligrams of adrenal cortex in the supplement per capsule. Mine has 250 milligrams. I did it that way because I recognized pretty early on that once I sold my medical practice and I could not use prescription cortisol, that I was going to have something that worked and was going to have to be, you know, really, really strong. And so I have the strongest adrenal cortex supplement that I know of on the market. And again, that's not to be braggadocious, but I did it so that my patients wouldn't have to take, you know, 10, 15 pills. I also have come to know that ARG and some of the other vendors that are out there, their adrenal cortex supplements are about four times the price of mine. So it can be a pricey, if it's really good, because the quality has to be really good, and it can be a pricey object, but I'm able to keep my costs down over the years because I have it made for me. And so I would encourage you to take adrenal cortex. Don't take adrenal, whole glandular adrenals, because of the adrenaline, it can make you feel worse. For the DHEA, I recommend, if you're female, I recommend ideally you get tested. But if you're not going to get tested, then you could start with 25 milligrams. Men would be 50 milligrams. Now, one thing you could do for the adrenal fatigue testing, I talk about this in the book, but I recommend you do the saliva test. I mean, that's how I test my patients. Much more accurate, get much more better results. However, you can self-test your adrenal function as well. And you do that, and I talk about it in the book. One of the ways to do that is you can test your blood pressure. So you can take your blood pressure lying down, and then you can take your blood pressure again when you stand up. Take it within 30 minutes of standing up. Now, you want to take your blood pressure when you stand up with your left arm held out in front of you at heart level, so perpendicular to you, and you should take your blood pressure. Now, what you should see is your blood pressure, that top number, that systolic number, should go up by 10 points. It should do that because you should be getting more blood and oxygen to the muscles and to your brain. If the systolic number goes down, that's a sign of adrenal fatigue. Another way you can test for adrenal fatigue is you can go into a darkened room, maybe, you know, probably a good room to be your bathroom, and you can shine a pin light into your eye while you're looking into the mirror. Shine it into your pupil, which is the black part of your eye, and that should dilate. That should enlarge. If within 30 seconds it constricts, it gets small again, that's a sign of adrenal fatigue. Now, why does that happen? It happens because typically with adrenal fatigue, you're deficient in sodium because you're low in aldosterone, one of the hormones released by the adrenal cortex. And when your sodium's low, your potassium goes up, and that causes you not to have the muscle strength in your eye to keep that dilated. So that's another way you can self-test to see. And what I recommend typically, as you'll see there on my website and you'll see there in the book, is that you start off with a low dose of the adrenal cortex, and then you increase that dose as you need to. Again, ideally you'd be tested, you'd be working with me, and we would do a test to see exactly what you needed. But if that's not an option at this point right now, then I would encourage you to read the book and see about the adrenal cortex and then the protocols about how to use those. Again, I cannot emphasize this enough. You want to use adrenal cortex supplements and not whole glandular supplements, which are going to have the adrenaline in. Very, very important, and you can learn more about that on my website, yourfibrodoctor.com. Now, what I want to do here, because we're going to run out of time, I definitely want to take some questions. I want to talk to you about the next energy robber, one of the biggest energy robbers that is so commonly missed in fibromyalgia, and that is a low thyroid function. I find that about 67% of my patients have a low thyroid function. They've never been properly diagnosed, and this is because most doctors don't understand fibromyalgia, and two, they're doing basic testing that misses this thing of low thyroid. You see, the symptoms of fibromyalgia are consistent with those of low thyroid: low body temperature, cold hands, cold feet, tingling in the hands and feet, pain in the hands and feet, fatigue, weight gain, brain fog, restless leg syndrome, IBS, depression, anxiety, brain fog. Studies have shown that upwards of 43% of those with fibromyalgia have a low thyroid function. And it's been estimated by experts, and I would agree with this, that those with fibromyalgia are 10 to 250,000 times more likely to suffer a problem with their thyroid. Now, the reason that is because the thyroid gland is controlled by, guess what? The HPA axis, the hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenals. And we've already talked about those that are too much stress are not working correctly, so they cannot help the thyroid work like it's supposed to. So stress definitely takes a toll on thyroid function, no doubt about it. And your thyroid gland, which is a little butterfly gland that sits right there in your throat above your breastbone, is responsible for releasing certain hormones that convert oxygen and calories. It turns calories into energy. So it regulates your energy. It regulates your metabolism. Your metabolism is the sum of all physical and chemical changes that take place with your body. So if your thyroid is compromised and your metabolism goes down, then every cell in your body is affected. Everything slows down when your thyroid is compromised, including your energy, your hair growth, your mental clarity, your digestion, your elimination, so you're constipated, your nerve impulses, so you get pain or tingling numbness in your feet and hands. You get cold hands and cold feet because your circulation decreases. You get swelling in your feet and your hands. You get restless leg syndrome because your muscles are not communicating like they're supposed to. So thyroid controls everything, every system in the body, every cell in the body. Hypothyroidism is a condition in which the thyroid gland does not make enough thyroid hormone, or it's compromised by being attacked in a condition called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. But again, the symptoms of low thyroid are fatigue, headache, dry skin, swelling, weight gain, cold hands, cold feet, poor memory, hair loss, hoarseness, you lose your voice, get laryngitis, nervousness, anxiety, depression, joint and muscle pain, tingling or burning in the hands and feet, yellowing of the skin, carpal tunnel syndrome, problems of balance and coordination, constipation, dry eyes, high blood pressure, chest pain, hardening of the arteries, high cholesterol, menstrual irregularities, PCOS, fibrocystic breast disease, reactive hypoglycemia, psoriasis, allergies, poor immune function. So we need to know that most of the time doctors are doing real basic testing, so they're testing your TSH. And if your TSH is elevated, then they'll tell you it has to be above 4.5. If it's above 4.5, that means you have hypothyroid or low thyroid. The problem with that is several years ago, the American College of Endocrinology came out, and they said that if your TSH is above 3.0, you are hypothyroid and you should be on medication. Then they came back and said, well, we've gotten such an uproar from family doctors and other doctors that everybody's going to be on thyroid medication, we're going to have to manage them, that let's just keep the parameter at 4.5. So basically what happens is a lot of times patients will go get their blood work done, their TSH will be at 3.5, well above 3.0, right? But it'll be below the 4.5, and they'll tell you everything's normal. But it's not. We know from the research, if your TSH is above 3.0, you have hypothyroidism. But most doctors, hardly any doctor, is going to treat you for that, with the exception of doctors who practice like I do. Now, I treat all my patients who have a TSH above 3.0. I treat them with over-the-counter thyroid supplements, thyroid hormones, that will get their thyroid to work correctly. The other thing we know is that doctors are, again, doing basic testing. They're testing your TSH. That's only one test of many tests that should be done to see how well or how poorly your thyroid's working. 80% of thyroid hormones, which are T4 hormones, and then the other 7% are T3. So you have a combination of T4 and T3. Doctors are not, sometimes they'll measure your T4, but they hardly ever measure your T3. The problem is that T4 is an inactive hormone. It's got to convert into T3. T3 is considered the active hormone. It is 300 times stronger than T4. In fact, you can live without T4, but you can't live without T3. And T3 is it, you know, and yet they're not even measuring it, partly because they're going to put you on a synthetic T4 medication like Synthroid or levothyroxine because it's easier to monitor, easier to dose. And so they put you on that even though they run the risk that it's not going to convert into T3. And as you know, since they're testing for the TSH and they tell you oftentimes that your TSH is in the normal range, whether it is or isn't, depending, you know, the interpretation of where it is, obviously, I would disagree because if it's above 3.0, you have a problem. But let's just say your TSH is at is within the normal range, okay? Let's say it's at 2. That still doesn't mean anything because here's the thing. What we're measuring is how much thyroid hormone is in the bloodstream. That's all we're measuring. We don't know how much is getting into the cell. It's just a guesstimation. What we're also not measuring is another hormone called reverse T3 that does, guess what? It blocks the conversion of inactive T4, which is the only thing they care about in traditional medicine, into the active T3. So you could have a normal TSH, you could have a normal T4, but if you're not measuring reverse T3, you don't know whether it's converting or not. What compounds that problem is a lot of patients are taking synthetic T4 medications like Synthroid and levothyroxine, and they go back month after month, year after year. They never feel any better. They tell their doctor that they don't feel any better. The hair is still falling out. They have no energy. They're constipated. They feel just lethargic, run down, no drive, no libido. And the doctor says, well, your blood work looks normal. Well, the blood work looks normal because they're not doing thorough blood testing, partly because they don't know anything about this. They've got their head in the sand, partly because they don't work with fibromyalgia patients. So they've never had to investigate this. You need to realize that also this conversion of T4 into T3 is contingent on you having enough good bacteria in your digestive system, because 20% of the conversion of T4 into the active T3 happens in your intestinal tract. So it's no wonder that people who have things like yeast overgrowth or have taken a lot of antibiotics or have problems with IBS, that they're not making that conversion. 80% of T3 comes from the conversion of T4, as I mentioned, and most of that T4 into T3 occurs in the conversion, that conversion occurs in the liver. So the problem with that is so many patients that I work with have elevated liver enzymes, or they have a fatty liver because they're carrying around a lot of extra weight. It could be because they've been taking Lyrica or Paxil or an antidepressant for a number of years, and they've gained a bunch of weight, and that has caused them to get fatty deposits in their liver. So that causes them not to be able to convert T4 into T3. It could be they're taking medications that have affected their liver, so their liver's not functioning like it should, so they're not making that conversion. There's many reasons, but what I want you to realize is if your doctor's telling you your thyroid is normal, don't believe them. You need some more thorough detective work to see is it in fact working or not. A deficiency in any of the B vitamins will contribute to low thyroid function. Low levels of copper, magnesium, manganese, and selenium all can affect the thyroid function and compromise it. Then you've got this thing called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which I'm going to finish up with. Hashimoto's thyroiditis is an autoimmune disease in which the immune system attacks and destroys the thyroid gland. It's the most common form of hypothyroidism, and it's generally treated with thyroid hormone replacement therapy, but only after the thyroid has burned out. Few doctors, including endocrinologists, will test for thyroid antibodies. Thyroid antibodies are hormones that go up when the thyroid is being attacked. Most doctors only test for TSH, maybe T4, as I mentioned earlier, and they don't test for these thyroid antibodies. The problem with that is Hashimoto's thyroiditis can start on its wayward journey years before it ever shows up. So you can have all the symptoms of low thyroid that I mentioned earlier. You can have them for years. And if they're just checking your TSH, the TSH is normal for years and years and years and years. Finally, though, the thyroid burns out, shuts down. Now your TSH goes up because it's trying to tell your body, hey, I need some more thyroid hormone. But by that time, the thyroid has burned itself out. Now they go in and tell you, oh, you know what? You've got Hashimoto's thyroiditis. We can put you on Synthroid. 11-thyroxine. Now, of course, we don't know is it going to convert, but we're going to put you on that, right? It's that mentality that gets people sick and keeps them sick. What we need to be doing is detective work and figuring out if they've got all the symptoms of low thyroid, could it be something other than TSH? And heck yeah, it could be. And we need to be doing the testing to find it. And so if you are not getting your thyroid antibodies checked, you certainly need to be doing that, because you could have something that's attacking your thyroid, and whether that's, there's many things that can do that, an imbalance of estrogen. We have estrogen dominance, so if you're taking birth control pills or you're taking hormone replacement therapy, if you're one of those individuals that had endometriosis or fibroid cysts over the years or irregular periods, all those are signs of estrogen dominance. That can affect your the body attacking your thyroid because you get a depletion of progesterone. It could be low vitamin D levels. Optimal vitamin D levels are not, you need to be above 50. They'll tell you 30. It needs to be 50. It could be a gluten intolerance. So it doesn't have to be celiac disease, but it could be you have an intolerance to gluten. That can be tested for. It could be that you have a virus or a bacteria or something that's attacking the thyroid tissue and causing the body to attack it, at the same time attack the thyroid tissue that then causes this Hashimoto's thyroiditis. But most doctors will tell you, you know, don't worry about that. We're going to you know, we'll treat that, you know, when we see it. But they'll treat it only when the thyroid has burned itself out. And again, the problem with that is if you do that, then you're going to see that you're going to be on Synthroid or levothyroxine, and that may or may not work. So I encourage you to find a doctor to work with, and unfortunately there's not many doctors who know that much about fibromyalgia, let alone you know, how to find and fix these underlying issues. But I encourage you to work with a doctor like myself that can help you unravel this mystery called fibromyalgia. You see, really, you know, I've helped thousands of patients get healthy over the years, and I've done that because this is all I do, and I've done it through trial and error, and I won't say perfected because I'm always learning. I can easily get humbled by many of the patients that I work with because they've been everywhere and tried everything before they come see me. But I've been successful because I've been able to be open-minded enough. If I don't understand what's going on, I got to do more and more detective work to help figure out what's going on with this patient. There's a reason why you have these symptoms, and what we want to know is what's causing the symptom. We don't want to just be covering up symptoms. We want to find and fix the causes. And so, really, there's no reason why you can't feel better, at least, and some of you, tremendously better. 95% of my practice is phone consults. I work with patients throughout the United States and Canada. And so really, you know, after sharing just a piece of what I've shared with you tonight, it's obvious that fibromyalgia, there's more to it than learning to live with it. And it should be obvious that there's things that you can do if you work with the right coach, the right doctor, who can actually help you figure out where you're broken down and help fix you. And so really, if any of what I've said to you tonight resonates with you, then, you know, I encourage you to read the book, and you can get the book at getfibrobooks.com, or you can get it on amazon.com. You can go to my website to learn more about the success stories, yourfibrodoctor.com. But really, you got a choice. You can continue to learn to live with it for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it is, and you can be miserable because it doesn't get better. You can watch your life pass you by as you get sicker and sicker and tired and tired, and you can withdraw, as many people do, from life to where you are hardly living. You know, you just try, is this going to be a good day or a bad day? I don't know. I'm not sure what it's going to be. That's sad, and it's a sad thing to even have to talk about, but it saddens me more that people don't know that they don't have to learn to live with it. You can make a stand. You can decide, okay, I'm going to learn about another approach, if this makes sense to you. If it doesn't, then, you know, I'm not the right doctor for you. If it does make the sense, or at least starts to make some sense, that, hey, it's about finding and fixing the underlying issues and not just covering up the symptoms, then I encourage you to put your flag in the ground and say, hey, I'm not gonna learn to live with it. I'm gonna learn everything I can, and I'm gonna figure out how I can get better. And so, you know, you got choices. You can continue to search the internet, and you can try to find one magical combination of drugs or, you know, supplements or LDN or medical marijuana or you know, whatever it is, you know, here, try this, here, try that. Or you can keep going to doctor after doctor, trying to find a doctor who will get you on the right combination of drugs to help manage your symptoms so you can learn to live with it. I mean, you know, that's your choice. You can do that. Or you can set up a phone consult with me, and after spending about half an hour with me on the phone, know exactly what you need to do to get healthy and feel good again. So, you know, the choices are keep looking for doctors in your area and hope you'll find someone that, number one, believes in fibromyalgia, many don't, two, that understands fibromyalgia, most don't, and more importantly, one that actually knows how to help you overcome fibromyalgia instead of help you learn to live with it. And there's very few of those out there. I happen to be one of those. So you can continue to choose that if you wish, or, again, you can go to fibroconsults.com, and you can fill out paperwork and set up a phone consult. And again, after we spend time with 30 minutes on the phone and I review any of your past labs, I can tell you exactly what you need to do to get healthy and feel good again. You know, every day, every single day, I pray to God that he will send me folks who need my help and who will appreciate what I do. And he never disappoints. And I feel that I'm blessed in that I have a calling to do what I do, which is to specialize in fibromyalgia, because I think for fibromyalgia, it is a miserable illness to have, and most people have given up all hope because they're told that there's nothing that can be done for them. And that's just not true. But every day I pray that God will send me the people that I can help, and that I help them. And you may be one of those people that's praying every day, too, for God to help you with your fibromyalgia. And maybe, maybe, just maybe, it's time you and I meet. And so I encourage you to learn more about what I do, more about the consults, the phone consults. You can learn more about those at fibroconsults.com. The 30-minute consult is $129. It's not covered by insurance. I wish it was, but phone consults are not covered by insurance. But again, you got a choice. You can keep doing what you're doing, and you can be no better than you are now, a year from now, 2 years now, 3 years now, 4 years now, or you can be proactive and you can set up a phone consult and learn what it is you need to do. What can you do? What are your options? Right now you don't even know what your options are. So I encourage you to learn more about that at my website, yourfibrodoctor.com and fibroconsults.com. Now, what I'd like to do, we've got a little bit of time here, and I'm going to open up the phone lines for questions. And so give me just a second here. A little bit of housekeeping. So what you'll need to do if you've got a question is to hit *6 on your phone. That will bring you on to the call live where I can hear you. Now, you'll need to state your name so I can call you out individually, okay, because we may have two or three people trying to get on at the same time, and I'll get to everybody, but I need to be able to call you out individually so that you'll know that I'm talking to you. But if you've got a question, if you'll hit *6, that'll bring you on the line. After you ask your question, then I would encourage you to self-mute your phone, and you can do that with your cell phone, or you can hit *6 again, and that'll mute you. So if you've got a question, I'm happy to answer your questions this evening. Just hit *6, and you'll come on the line.
Hello, my name is Megan.
Hi, Megan. Go ahead.
First of all, I want to thank you for this conference call, and I like the fact that you are a godly man and you do your prayers, that people will reach you, and I think that my prayers have been answered to have found you. I'm reading your book currently, and I'm finding out a lot of great information. I currently work with a rheumatologist, and it's kind of it's that difficulty that you talked about because he does not specialize in fibromyalgia. He does believe that it's true, but he doesn't necessarily know what to do. How, until I can get a consult with you, how do I work with my doctor? I actually see him Friday, to talk about getting, the DHA, or no, I'm sorry, one of the blood tests that you talked about. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find.
Yeah, so you could certainly ask him about doing.
How do I do that tactfully?
It's going to be hard, just to be real candid with you, because the rheumatologist are very conservative. They do everything pretty, not everyone, but the majority, 95% of rheumatologists are going to do everything pretty much by the book. And a lot of times it's either their way or the highway. I hate to say that, mm-hmm. but it's true. And the only way they know to help somebody is to give them drugs. It's not that they're bad people.
Right.
It's just that's the only way they think. And putting them, and I'm kind of down on them, as you know, in the book. I have a kind of a paint them in a bad light, and I do that because I've run into so many of them that I think are just terrible, mm-hmm. terrible. They're not off that way. But they're so, they can be so mean, you know, they can be so mean to fibromyalgia patients. But
yes.
putting yourself in their shoes, you know, just for a minute to go to their defense, you know, what they really treat is autoimmune diseases like lupus and rheumatoid and Sjogren's and things like that that are just devastating, debilitating illnesses, and no other doctor wants to treat those things. And the only way right now those are treated are with drugs. And so they have the same mentality about fibro, that the only way they know to do anything is with drugs. So to answer mm-hmm. your question, though, you can go ask for these tests. The problem is that they're not going to know how to help you interpret them, and they're sure as heck not going to know anything about 5-HTP or melatonin or adrenal cortex supplements or anything. So my advice to you is just as soon as you can, whatever, I'm not sure what your limitations are or reservations are, but I would set up a consult, and then you take
okay.
all the guesswork out of what's going on. You know, otherwise, you're just guessing. You know, am I taking the right supplement? Am I taking the right drug? And you can do that forever, and it's just not going to get you very far.
Okay. And I've had a lot of blood work done through him and then an immunologist and then through a hematologist oncologist. And I'm working on getting all of those blood work results ready so we can have that consult
mm-hmm.
with you.
Yeah, definitely have that ready because I'll go through all that with you. Obviously, I interpreted it differently than they do, and I'll explain all that when we talk, when we go to the consult. I'll go into detail over that with you and explain some of the things that I see and then, you know, what your options are, what you need to do, yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. This was very educating, and I'm very glad that I called in for this. So thank you so very much.
Thanks, Megan. Thank you. Okay, so we got any other callers on the line that have got a question? I'm happy to take your question.
Hello, this is Marisa.
Hi, Marisa. Go ahead.
Okay, I've been working with my rheumatologist and have asked him, I read your book, and so I'm very thankful for what you have put together as a protocol, and I've started some of it, but I was working with a rheumatologist who I shared some of your pathways with and asked him to please check me for adrenal fatigue and to check my DHEA and my cortisol levels. So it was about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. They did the cortisol level and the DHEA, and it all came back normal, according to him. But I was a little low in my cortisol. It was at, I think it was a 2.9. And so he wants to, he's open to some of the things that I've discussed with him regarding your book. And he's going to I guess he wants to get another blood sample for the cortisol, but yet taking it in the morning. But what my question to you is, this is going to be a blood test, and it's going to be just the morning. Should I do that test and still follow up with you and have a consultation with you, or should I have this the saliva cortisol testing done and then have a consult with you?
Okay, so good question. So first of all, I salute your rheumatologist. At least they're somewhat open-minded, and that's great because many are not. And I hate to paint them all with that brush. It's not fair, but it's just the way it is doing this 20 years and interacting with them. So at least he's open-minded. Now, the challenge is, though, ideally you'd have a 4-sample cortisol level instead of one, and if you're going to have one, you would have the early morning fasting one to see what that one shows. That's probably, if you're going to do a blood test, the most important one. Here's the thing is when your lab test is low normal, that means it's low.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Do you follow me? Okay, because you're
mm-hmm.
special, right? Okay. If your lab test is high normal, it's high. because what you're looking at is a sample between a high and a low, and then there's an average. Well, Marissa, there's nothing average about you or anybody else with fibromyalgia. You're special. So anytime we have a clue on a test that shows us it's high normal, that should dictate that we do more testing, or it should tell us that, yes, in fact, you've got a problem. So if your cortisol level is low, normal, then it's not optimal. What you want is, okay, like everybody else, you want to be optimal. You don't want to be a D student. Yeah, you know, you passed, but you want to be an A student or at least a B student, right? So that, and the other thing is, now, when they do the testing, if you don't have Addison's disease, which means your thyroid, I'm sorry, your Cushing's disease, so your, or Addison's disease, your adrenal glands have shut down, they're going to tell you it's okay. That's all they see is black and white. But there's a lot of shades of gray in there, okay? And you see that in the book. I'll go into detail about that. So I guess the follow-up on that is it's whatever your preference. But if we do a consult, I'll take whatever you have, and I'll give you my interpretation, which I guarantee you more than likely will be a different interpretation than what they'll have.
Okay. All right.
And
so
the advantage of the consult, the advantage of the consult, it just takes all the guesswork out of what you need to do, and then I'll just share with you, here are your options. You know, you got all these options. What makes the most sense to you?
Okay. So I already filled out my paperwork, so I'm going to talk with Juno and get that set. But do you want me to send medical records or my lab testing?
Yes, lab tests. I need a lab test. The medical records I don't necessarily need usually, and if I do, I can get those. But blood work, I definitely want to see a year or 2 years worth of blood work for sure.
Okay. All right, got to get my hands on that then.
Yeah, and if you need help with that, all you can do is call us. We can get it for you too. So you can fill out a records request, and we can get it if you have trouble. So just let us know.
Okay, and then when you order the testing, do the slips come through you, or do you send the whole test, like the cortisol?
It just depends, and so it depends on the person and what we're testing for, and then. But a lot of times that can be done in your local area. You can go to get blood work done locally, or a test kit can be mailed to you. But everybody's a little bit different. I go into all the different options and give you the pros and cons of them when we talk.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, that's all I have. And thank you so much for writing your book. I'm a friend of Linda Marcil, who is also, she's had a consult with you and has followed your book, and she's a big promoter of yours here in Southern California.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for your call, Marissa.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so if you got anybody else that's got a question, I'll do my best to answer your question this evening.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Your name?
My name is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you, doctor? I just want to tell you thank you for writing that fantastic book. I finally got a hold of it after waiting 2 weeks to receive it. I'm thrilled I got it. I read it twice already. It is fantastic. It's me to a T. I have fibromyalgia about 12 years now. Back in 2013, I broke my neck. And I had a lot of problems with it from that point on, even worse. Well, my doctor is not a rheumatologist. I have never went to a rheumatologist, but he did diagnose me with polymyalgia. And every time I go for blood work, he says it comes back fine, but I am extremely fatigued. My hands and my feet are constantly cold. My legs are constantly cold. I get very depressed. I have a tired. I can't get to sleep. And when I do try to go to sleep, my anxiety level is so high that I can't fall asleep. So I just try to calm myself down. But I should tell you, when I had broke my neck, they had put me on prednisone. And I've been on it for 6 years. I'm finally being weaned off of it from the beginning when I was on it at 60 milligrams. I'm down to 5 milligrams now every 4 days, which is wonderful because I just want to get off of it. And my biggest problem, doctor, is that I'm constantly lightheaded, not dizzy. I'm not dizzy, but I'm constantly lightheaded. And it's an awful feeling because I'm a grandmother and I babysit my grandkids and I get a little nervous, you know. I don't want to fall.
Sure.
I don't want to be on the floor. My thyroids, he says he's tested them with my blood work, but I just got something back that says my thyroid might be a little bit, I might be starting to have diabetes. I don't know. But he says it's nothing in the danger zone. But I am definitely going to call Juno and get a consultation set up because I definitely would like the blood work that you do because I know there's something. I am not myself, you know. I was a very active person. And I think I just... and another thing, which I read in your book, doctors said the same thing to me. You know, I asked him for a good multivitamin. He says, as long as you're eating a good, diet, and which I am, I don't eat a lot of red meat. I try to be careful. I'm not that much overweight, but I could lose maybe 15 pounds because I think being on the prednisone for so long put some weight on me. But as I went lower on the dosage, I'm a little bit better. And that's, couple times he says, you know, your lightheadedness is probably due to, you know, your balance problems or your, coming down off of the prednisone. But it doesn't, everything I read on prednisone, which I do read a lot, there wasn't much about, you know, lightheadedness on prednisone. So I'm really, concerned because I hate feeling this way. I used to have loads of energy, and it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very tired in the day when I get up. As soon as I get up, so I'm definitely am gonna fill up the paperwork, and give Juno a call and see if maybe we can find out what my levels are, what my problems is. I would really appreciate it because you are a godsend to me. I heard about you over the radio, and it was like something saying, just, you know, call him. This is the real thing. So I'm thrilled to have found you. I'm in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I'm a far way. Believe me, if I could come to Birmingham, Alabama, I would. But if you could help me this way, I would definitely appreciate it.
Well, I'd
very
love
much.
To, Kathy. I look forward to going through your paperwork and any labs that you got now, because obviously I look at them differently.
I do have lab work.
Send those as well.
I do have lab work for the past two years. I can send you all of that so you could see at least what's going on with me. And then we can go from there, okay?
Okay.
That
sounds
like a plan.
Thanks.
Thank you
for calling,
so much,
Kathy.
Doctor. You're very welcome. I'll be talking to you soon. Bye-bye now.
Okay, so we got a few more minutes here. If anybody else has got a question, if you'll hit *6 if you haven't already, and that'll bring you on the line live. Well, so we need to wrap up for this evening, and I want to thank those who joined me this evening and for those who called in and got a question. I really appreciate you being proactive in doing so. It helps others to hear your question. And I think a lot of times with fibromyalgia, you feel so isolated and alone. And unfortunately, a lot of times you feel hopeless. And my goal, more so than ever, this year and the coming years, is to spread hope in the fibromyalgia community, because we're at the point now where people are just giving up. Their doctors are giving up. They're telling people you just have to learn to live with it. And I don't believe that. I don't believe God put us here to learn to live with something and settle and watch life pass you by. I don't believe that. I think you should. I mean, everybody has challenges in life, and certain people have chronic illnesses. I mean, that happens. It's just, that's part of life, and sometimes that's a learning experience that you know, God gives us. But just to settle and not try to get better, I don't think that's our nature, and especially those who are really proactive. And if you are proactive, I encourage you, don't learn to live with this thing. Learn to overcome it. There are options. I have been blessed to be able to work and help patients for the last 20 years overcome their fibromyalgia. And I feel very blessed and honored to do that. So I encourage you, if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, I encourage you to make the choice of getting healthy. And the first step would be to set up a phone consult and or to get the book. But you can certainly set up a phone consult and learn what your options are. You know, after spending 30 minutes with me, you'll know what you need to do and then what your options are. And you can learn more about that at fibroconsults.com. And you can go on the website, yourfibrodoctor.com, and read about the success stories and all the things that we got going on at the clinic and all the free resources, the videos that you can listen to. And I look forward to talking to many of you in the future. This is Dr. Roger Murphy, author of Treating and Beating Fibromyalgia and Chronic Fatigue Syndrome. And I hope that we get an opportunity to talk in the near future.